The following is an encore episode of Hour 1 of the Turley Frequency with host Kevin Turley. We hope you enjoy.
Welcome to the Turley Frequency, live and exclusive here on Archangel Radio. This is your early morning cold shower. You know, it's the moment when you're going to get up and get going and face the day. That's why we're here, okay? You've just had an hour of LA Catholic morning where you've had to contend with all the news of the world, and a lot of it is depressing. Let's be honest. These next 2 hours, we are going to take you, shake you, and get you in the mood for this Wednesday, this wonderful Wednesday created by God. And you are here with me this morning to enjoy it. And boy, what a show we have lined up for you today. We're talking mysticism. Now, don't move and don't switch that knob to another station. We're talking mysticism later with Father Donald Hegarty. And we're going to unpack mysticism. What is mysticism? And what does it mean for the average Catholic? That's the question. Never mind being in some rarefied contemplative community somewhere. What does it mean for the man, the woman on the street? We are going to be putting those questions to him. And also unraveling, who was John of the Cross? You've heard the name. I've heard the name. Let's find out more about him. As always, top of the hour, we will be entering into the divine mercy, which is the real form of mysticism. And we are looking for you to be party to that. And you can be by calling 888-928-0881 or text me on 251-928-2111. We want your prayer requests. We want to pray for you. We really do. Didn't we have a great time yesterday with Kay? Wasn't she wonderful? I don't know what Kay's secret is. And Kay, if you're listening, thank you so much for coming in. But you seem to attract so many callers. It was unbelievable. Totally unbelievable. It was great. And of course, at the end, we have story time. And today I'm telling you the story of a mystic who was very much rooted in the world. Somebody who was a working man, not that well educated. And yet, I would say he was a first rate mystic. But you'll have to hang around to hear more about that. So welcome to Wednesday here on the Turley Frequency, the only frequency you're going to need this morning for the next 2 hours to get you up, get you going, and hopefully to put a smile on your face at some point during the day. I'm not sure if we're talking music today. We talked a lot about music these last couple of days, but it makes me feel old when I talk to Reed about music, and he mentions all these bands that I've never heard of. So I'd like to talk to you. Now, if you're out there today, why don't you just give me a ring? There is no subject out of bounds, okay? We have what's known as open lines for the next 15 minutes or so. We are at your disposal. We will talk about anything you like. My challenge to you is simply to call this station. Call Archangel, call the Turley Frequency, have your say. Whatever's on your mind, whatever's on your heart, get it out there. So why don't you give me a call on 888-928-0881 or text me on 251-928-2111. Whatever it is, there is no subject out of bounds on this show.
Hey, Kevin, okay? We actually have a caller already.
Really?
We sure
well,
do.
Well, isn't that a...
Let me go ahead and link them in for you.
Okay. Hello, who have we got on the line?
Oh, Kevin, hey, this is Doris. I'm from Sylacauga, Alabama. Oh, my God, I have enjoyed it. I mean, thoroughly enjoyed listening to your show. I love everything Archangel does. My husband and I, we were visiting. I think we went to St. Lawrence. Of course, I always have to drag his story behind the church everywhere I go. Lord bless his heart. He's, you know, he's falling away, and I'm trying to get him back. But anyway, I just love your accent. I just want to, you know, your accent is so amazing. It's just so beautiful. I just want to pinch your little Irish cheeks until all the gold comes out.
Doris, it's so good to hear your voice this time in the morning in Alabama. I'm just so pleased you called in. You know, I put out the number, and I always hoped that somebody would call in. So it's so good for you to call in, Doris. I mean, are you a regular listener to Archangel Radio?
Oh, I am. Yeah, I came down here. I think it was about 5 years ago, And I just started listening. Me and my husband, he loves football. Everybody loves football down here in the South, and he loves that Mac McGill of football and now St. Michael. But we just absolutely love it. I've got it tuned. I've got the app, the phone app, and I listen to it just about every day, every morning. Of course, I'm tuned into y'all, and I love the Archangel, the morning show with. I think it's with Todd and Ellen. Oh, they do such a wonderful job. I'm praying for y'all and praying for you, and I hope y'all get more calls.
Well, that's really kind of you, Doris, and it's good of you to call in, and I hope that you'll think about calling in one day during the Divine Mercy Chaplet and call in with some prayer intentions and have us pray for you and your husband and everybody else in your community out there. I'm not familiar with the place you're calling from. Is it a nice place to live?
Oh, it's absolutely beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Don't have too many Catholic churches here, mostly surrounded by Protestants. God bless their souls. We'll welcome them back in. But anyway, just want to pray for y'all. And I will certainly be calling up, give my laundry list of all my attentions that I've got today. Lord, I've got so many family members that have left the church and my husband. He, I'm trying to get him back. Hold on for a second. Noah! Get the shotgun, and the dogs are out again. I'm sorry, my neighbor's dogs, they get out so frequently and try to eat up all my hydrangeas, and I'm tempted to, Lord, wow. Forgive me, I'm tempted to shoot them.
Doris, it sounds like you've got a busy morning out there.
Oh, I do. Every morning's busy. It's something my husband Norm keeps me busy. And of course, I take my time to listen to Archangel.
That's great. I think we may have lost Doris there.
Hello?
Doris, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I thought the dog had got you there, Doris.
No, my husband outside. He's outside. He's trying to scare those dogs off. He's so scared. He's afraid of them. They're Doberman pinchers. Hey, come on back inside. I'm sorry. I'm gonna have to let you go, Kevin. But I will certainly be calling you up, and we will have this conversation. We'll continue our conversation, and I will give you my laundry list of intentions. Okay, y'all can pray for them.
Absolutely, Doris. You're welcome anytime. Call in anytime here on the Charlie Frequency on 888-928-0881 or text me on 251-928-2111. Well, there we have it. We have Doris from Reed. What was the name of that place that she was calling from?
She was calling from Sylacauga, Alabama, I believe.
Where is Sylacauga?
I'm not exactly sure. It's north of here. That's for sure. Mike might know.
Yeah,
is Mike? Have you heard of this place?
It's north. It's closer to Birmingham. It's about 30 minutes away from north of Birmingham, towards the east. My mom is funny because I was gonna come on before she left and had to go deal with her dogs and her husband. But my mom, and I should have asked her this. My mom is from is from Sylacauga, and so obviously my grandmom and granddad, God rest their souls, and they grew up there in the 50s and 60s and 70s, and it's just a wonderful place. We'd always visit. Mm-hmm. It was a short drive. Of course, when we were little, it seemed like a little bit forever. 10 minutes seems like an eternity, but no. Always enjoyed my time in Sylacauga, small little town, little city. And so my granddad, he worked, even in his retirement, he worked at a funeral home, was the funeral director, and had lots of great stories about that, and just a wise man. But no, a wonderful, wonderful little small town. It kind of reminds me of, it reminds me of the town Mayberry. It's like a little Mayberry.
Right. Mayberry. Where's Mayberry? Sorry.
I guess you wouldn't know the show. The Andy Griffith Show was a popular show.
I've heard of it, but it never came across the Atlantic. Andy Griffith is not somebody that we know over here, surprisingly. Some American shows come over and we're as familiar as anybody else, okay. But that's not one. So Maybury. So, sorry, tell me the name of the town again.
It's Sylacauga.
And Sylacauga.
So listen, I didn't want to interrupt. She was on a roll. I didn't want to interrupt her. But
well, listen, Doris, you have started something.
I hope she calls up because I want to ask her if she knows, if she, you know, knew of my grandparents. So hopefully she'll call back.
Well, let's see. Doris, if you're out there listening, and we hope you are, then do feel free to call back in again. And if you know Mike's family, the Romano clan, we'd be very glad to have you back on air talking about that. And anybody who lives in that part of the world, that part of Alabama, then listen, Doris has broken the ice. She's called in. And listen, you don't have to talk about anything in depth, you know? I mean, you don't have to talk about world politics, church politics, the state of the nation. No, just tell me what's going on in your life. I mean, with Doris, it was obviously, I think, Reed and Mike, it was the dogs and her husband that were exercising her today,
hey,
really.
Yeah, I don't blame her husband. I'd be afraid of a Doberman Pinscher, too.
Yeah, they could be nasty creatures. Now, do you remember, Reed, the other day I said to you to remind me to tell you about my Adele story, because you'd heard of Adele, right?
Yep, I remember you told me to do that yesterday, and I didn't. Is what I remember.
Your memory is getting very good. Yes. So, so you know who Adele is, and Mike knows who Adele is, right?
Yes.
Yep.
So we got at least two. Now, if I were to tell you my Adele story, you probably wouldn't believe it, but it's true. And, you know, I suddenly realized that living in London, I have had an interesting life. So after I got married, my wife and I were living in a different part of London, South London, and we were living in a very large Victorian house, but we rented, it was converted into apartments, and we had the top apartment, right? So it was this large, beautiful building and beautiful apartment at the top. But there were another, at least two apartments, one in the middle and then a basement, right? And the way that these things work in London is that you kind of buy an apartment and you share the freehold. Now, I don't know, do you have that in the States? So you sort of share the ownership. You know, you have your own individual apartment, but you share the ownership. Are you two still with me?
Yes, we are. I mean, like, there's apartments where, you know, there'll be multiple housing situations in one building.
But the reason why I say we share the freehold is because we had to have meetings with the other households, right? Because we had, you know, the upkeep of the roof or the grounds or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. Right? So they were shared ownership. So that meant we would often have meetings. So you get to know your neighbors as you do anywhere, right? And the man at the bottom was living, I think you call them condos. I think that's what you call them.
But yes, that is what we call them.
Exactly. So you get the idea. A number of condos in an old building. And anyway, we have meetings with these people. And the man who lived in the bottom condo was he had a relationship breakdown shortly after we came. It upset him greatly. I remember talking to him about it. You know, the sort of conversations you have on the corridor as you're leaving and coming and how are you and this sort of thing. And but I noticed that there was a mother and a daughter that he was living with, I guess. And then the mother moved out, but the daughter seemed to keep coming back. You know, the daughter was a regular, because often I would meet her at the door, and have to let her in. And, you know, she was a teenager, a podgy little teenager, you know,
mm-hmm.
Nice enough young woman, but I paid no attention to her whatsoever. In she went and then she'd chat with. Occasionally I'd see her leaving with him and, you know, it was hi and goodbye. Anyway, this continued for a number of years. And then just about a few, maybe 6 months before we left that address, I was one day I was having a bath, right? And it was the middle of the day. I don't know why. It was sort of late afternoon. It was a beautiful sunny day. So the windows were all open. The blinds were down, don't worry. But the windows were open and you could hear the various sounds out on the street, you know, and around about London. It was always noisy. Mm-hmm. It was always noise. But that day I remember the noise particularly because I heard this beautiful piano playing and singing. And I remember thinking, wow, somebody's playing their hi-fi very loudly. And then suddenly I realized it wasn't a hi-fi at all. It was a somebody singing.
Mm-hmm.
So we had one of these meetings in the house a few days later. And I said to the gentleman in the ground floor, I said, wow, I said, you know, was that your, and I named it, was that, you know, so-and-so singing? And he said, oh, yeah. He said, she's going to be the next big thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, really? He said, yeah. She's signing with a music company, whatever they call them, record company. And she's going to be the next big thing. I said, sure, no problem. You know, see you. Anyway, 6 months later, I was sitting in a different, in where I'm living at the moment. And, by the way, somebody's just texted me. You know what a hi-fi is, don't you, Reed? Like it's a music system, you know, like mm-hmm. a record player or what do you call them today? What do you call them? Stereo systems? What do you call them?
It would be either a stereo or like a record player.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And somebody else has said, you don't understand. Do you know what podgy means? Do you know
what podgy yes.
means? What does it mean?
Like plump.
A bit round.
Plump. Yeah, like a turkey, right?
Yeah.
And, so anyway. I don't mean that disrespectfully, by the way. It was just a descriptive thing. Anyway, so 6 months later, I'm sitting with YouTube on, and I shout over to my wife and say, come here. She comes over, and I said, do you remember that little girl that used to live downstairs?
Mm-hmm.
She said, yeah. I said, there she is. And it was the Emmys, and it was Paul McCartney standing in the front row clapping and Adele singing. So the little girl that I had to let in and all the rest of it was Adele.
Wow.
And that music I heard that day was Adele singing. Adele Atkins, as she was then.
There you go. You got a preview.
I got a private sound check on her latest album, whatever it was. But
was Paul McCartney like, was he like, I know that girl. You know who also knows that girl is Kevin Turley with the Turley Frequency.
Well, listen, I mean, I don't ask to meet these people, but somehow in my life they drift across. I mean, I have told that story a number of times. And I suspect that some people think I make it up. But why would I make up such a ridiculous story about Adele, right? There's no way I could make that story up. I'm not even a fan of Adele's music. You know, I don't really follow her music or whatever. But it's really, really interesting that if you'd stopped me on the street and said, you see that little girl who comes from a broken home, who goes in and out occasionally and always looks so mournful, right? She always looks so sad. If you'd said to me that she was going to be an international singing star, I would have said no chance.
Not only that, she was number 8, I believe, on that Rolling Stones list.
She was. You're absolutely right, Reed. Well spotted. But, you know, we didn't have much dealings with her. But my wife and I one time had to move some furniture into our apartment quite late at night. I had driven off to get it and come back, and we were moving it in quite late at night. And a very sleepy Adele emerged from the bottom condo and said to my wife, you're keeping me up. Right? And then she stormed off. She's a typical teenager, right? And then stormed off. And I said, what did you say to her? I said, she just said, I'm sorry. And that was it. So whenever I was showing my wife that picture of the Emmys, I turned to my wife and said, do you know what? You should have been nicer to that child. So that's my Adele story. If you want to comment on it, call in 888-928-0881 or text me on 251-928-2111. Now, at the top of the hour, we are doing the Divine Mercy, and I will tell you my Cardinal Pell story at that point. Yes, it's true. These are true stories. I'm running out of stories, though, I have to say. But these are famous people who have crossed my path. And you probably heard the sad news today. Sad for us that Cardinal Pell has died, but not maybe sad for him. Like Pope Benedict, he led a good life. And please God, we'll be merciful. And we'll remember him more at the top of the hour. But coming up next, we have Father Donald Hegarty, and we are talking all things mystical. You're not going to want to miss this. Stick around. Welcome back to the Turley Frequency here, live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. And I'm your host, Kevin Turley, coming to you live from London through the wonders of the internet. Now, talking of wonders, have you ever wondered what mysticism is? Mysticism is one of those words in the English language that is abused second only probably to the word spiritual. If you hear a lot of talk radio, as I do, you will hear the word mystical used in its most inappropriate sense. Mystical is often the prefigurement for some fake quack clairvoyant who comes on and tells you what's going to happen next week, etc., etc. That's about the height of most people's understanding of mysticism. Well, to clarify what it is and who it is and where we what we should be doing with it, I'm delighted to say that I'm joined by Father Donald Hegarty, who is a priest of the Archdiocese of New York, and it serves at the famous St. Patrick's Cathedral there. Over the years, Father Donald has taught moral theology and worked as a spiritual director in seminaries for 20 years, and he often directs yearly retreats for the Missionaries of Charity, better known as Mother Teresa's Nuns. He is a faculty member of the Avila Institute for Spiritual Formation. Most of you will have heard Dan Burke on LA Catholic Morning. Well, he's the head honcho there. Father Donald is also the author of Contemplative Provocations, The Contemplative Hunger, Conversion, and Contemplative Enigmas, all published by Ignatius Press. And his latest book is one that fascinates me because it is St. John of the Cross, Master of Contemplation. Father Donald, welcome to the Turley Frequency.
Thank you, Kevin. I appreciate you having me.
It's a great pleasure to have you here because I have a lot of questions about mysticism, you know. I mean, would you agree that mysticism is one of those words that's roundly abused in common parlance?
Well, Kevin, I think you hit it on the head in your opening remarks. There is a kind of pseudo-mysticism that can be chased after by people. Sometimes there is, as you said, just a misuse of the word, the associating with clairvoyance and even in Catholic circles, associating mysticism with extraordinary experiences. So we say that Padre Pio was a mystic. He had the stigmata, or a seer like Saint Bernadette had mystical experience in an apparition. But the reality of relations with God does not require anything extraordinary of that nature, you know, something visible or heard. St. Teresa of Avila was a mystic. She had occasional experiences in a dramatic way, of something out of the ordinary. But to me, in short, I would say the key word in this is contemplation. And this is what Teresa of Avila and St. John of the Cross were teaching very clearly, especially St. John of the Cross, and that should be a pursuit in our lives, to become contemplative, to enter into the grace of contemplation, which is not easy, and to strive for that grace in our lives.
Well, this is wonderful stuff, Father Donald, and I'm looking forward to unpacking this all with you. But I just want to clear away a few things, if I may, first of all, because a lot of people you talk about, we know the phony mystics straight away when we hear them, the clairvoyants, the people at the sideshows of the circus, you know, that sort of thing. We get that. That's complete garbage. But there's another type of mystic that haunts religious gatherings. And often I find them, to be honest, at Marian shrines. And I had a recent very, very bad experience of this, where there was somebody who came from nowhere. I'm not going to identify even their gender. And they seemed to move around the pilgrims gathered, going up to people and saying, "I have a word for you from the Holy Spirit," or I've been given this word for you. And then they would look them in the eye, sort of Rasputin style, and tell them, and this person would go around, and there was a credibility to them, but there was also something really quite disturbing about them. Now, do you know what I'm talking about, Father Donald?
Yes, I mean, Kevin, this is something that seems to be very prevalent. I think it's an overflow of the of charismatic approaches to spirituality. Now, there is something good and, you know, valid and has been very fruitful in charismatic movements. I don't want to criticize that. But sometimes, like everything, spirituality can go off the edge. And this idea of receiving messages from God, becoming a conduit, you know, to relay these messages that God is speaking in concrete, you know, very explicit statements within one's mind or heart, and then to be expressed to another, the likelihood, a severe likelihood, is this is a an illusion, and of course very damaging if people take it seriously. I know someone who perhaps his life has gotten twisted around in circles and knots that he's never been able to untie because of chasing after messages of this nature. And especially these tend to not be, you know, minor things. You know, take the 45 bus up to Upper Manhattan. It has to do with vocation or, you know, some serious spiritual moves. And often that derails a person's life.
Yes, and I think, I mean, you know, St. Paul talks about testing the spirits, and I mean, I don't know about you, Father Donald, but there's a kind of gut reaction to this, and these people tend to make my skin crawl, which is often a good indication that what they're saying is not valid. But leaving them aside, the other thing that seems to bedevil mysticism, and you've alluded to this a little, is the whole business of private revelations. Now, just so there's no confusion, can you give us the catechism, the church's teaching on private revelations?
Well, the church acknowledges that it's possible that some saints in particular have received the private revelations, you know, such as at Lourdes and Fatima, you know, about Padre Pio, and there is no requirement of a Catholic to give divine faith to that. It's not a requirement of theological faith, supernatural faith. But when the church affirms the authenticity of a private revelation, then we're confirmed more or less that, you know, something for sure happened, as is expressed in that description of that apparition and the words that were spoken. But the idea of private revelations received commonly is the detour on this. And, you know, it would seem that private revelation is a rare, you know, occurrence, and God uses it for some purpose. And Mary has, and sometimes, been a key person in the divine plan for private revelation. But in general, this would seem to be not a good thing to go in pursuit of. You know, to love Our Lady of Fatima, or love Our Lady of Lourdes, you know, that is great, but not to expect, you know, private revelation. You know, we have the Eucharist, we have Mary in the Rosary. We have, it's not just meat and potatoes spirituality, but we have already the great gifts from God, especially in the Eucharist and in Mary.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Father Donald Haggerty, who is leading us through this Wisdom Wednesday into the land of true mysticism as opposed to the false sort. Okay, well, Father Donald, thank you for that. That kind of just clears the ground a little bit of what it isn't. But let's go back to the beginning. And in the church's wisdom, how would you define mysticism? How could you give us, for the woman, the man on the street, what is mysticism?
Well, the traditional understanding of mysticism is, in a sense, synonymous with the crossing of a threshold into a deeper grace of contemplation in life. And in the older traditional works of spirituality, you move from the ascetical way on into the mystical way when the graces of contemplation are beginning in one's life. So it has nothing to do with visions or locutions or special messages, but a deeper reality of union with God, will to will, a deeper longing, you know, taking place within the interior life. And, you know, these are terms, you know, terminology, but I would go back to what we said initially. I think the key thing is, and it's possible, you know, in this world, to cross over a threshold where our prayer, our interior life, and that will overflow outside of prayer, is becoming contemplative. It's receiving the grace yes. of contemplation, and there are requirements for that. And in a sense, you could say that is the beginning of a quote-unquote mystical life. It has nothing to do with visions, though. It has to do with a greater intimacy in the soul with God.
That's really interesting, because over the years I've read many books on this, and I've never heard it sort of explained so simply, that deeper reality of a union with God, which suggests, Father Donald, that this path, this journey, is open to all Christians.
Well, it's open to all Christians with, you know, very rigorous demands also. And my clear understanding in teaching this and doing retreats that is that the reason why people begin to experience contemplative graces, and I've seen it many times in Missionaries of Charity and other people, but the reason why people begin to experience these graces in their interior life of prayer and the difficulties of it is because they're giving themselves, they're giving their will very generously to God. And this is the main cause of contemplative grace, or what we might call the beginning of a threshold crossing into mystical life, so-called. And it's because the person's will is becoming more united with the will of God. They're not deliberately, you know, in a sense, throwing a wrench into the life of longing for God. And then they're taking that into prayer, where the will has a deep desire for God, a deep longing for God. It's like you've turned, you know, something of a flame on, and then the more they give themselves sacrificially to their vocation, they're generous in giving, they're striving to give themselves to the will of God, then something begins to undergo transformation in the interior life, and prayer is affected by that. Now, that's possible for a layperson, possible surely for a nun, for a priest, for a seminarian, it's possible, but it's rigorous too in demands because, and if we have many distractions, if we go in pursuit of a lot of, you know, we could say innocent pleasure, but a lot of things, you know, that are turning us away from even the thought of God, mm-hmm. That would become more difficult.
Yes, and it's interesting that you say that in some ways it's almost like a substitution of our desires for God's will in our lives. Is that too facile a summing up?
I mean, that's well said. And John of the Cross has a aphorism where he will comment, "Deny your desires and you will find out what your heart really longs for." And deep down, what our heart, our soul longs for is God. But deny your, it's not just an ascetical remark there, you know, deny your desires, but not to be consumed impulsively, compulsively, with just in pursuit of, especially today, you know, the perpetual distraction of, you know, turning to technology and, you know, the need for information all the time and not pausing in our life for, you know, turning to God. And mm-hmm. I think the pause for God is the key thing in spiritual life. You know,
absolutely.
To try to stop some. Hmm?
Well, Father Donald, pause there, because we are going to go for a break in just a moment. And when we come back, I'd really like to talk to you in particular about St. John of the Cross, because I have to say that I've read many mystics in my time, but St. John of the Cross is somebody who I have faltered in the foothills of Mount Carmel when it comes to St. John of the Cross. So you're listening to Father Donald Hegarty here with me this morning on the Turley Frequency, and we are talking all things mystical, and you can be part of it on 888-928-0881. Call in with a question about mysticism. Speak to you after these words. Well, live and exclusive here on Archangel Radio, and it's my great pleasure to be in conversation with Father Donald Hegarty, and we are talking all things mystical. Father Donald, your latest book is on St. John of the Cross, and as I was saying just before we went to the break, St. John of the Cross is one of those saints which completely defeats me. Have you come across this experience before?
I think many people are intimidated by him, that I've run into that with the Sisters of Mother Teresa and others, and he's considered sometimes too high or an elite, you know, writer for only those who are, you know, too far above the ordinary. And I think John of the Cross, if we read him, and a good place to start with him is to read his aphorisms. There are perhaps 25 pages in the collected works of his aphorisms. I included some of them in the back of the book, St. John of the Cross, Master of Contemplation. And his aphorisms were written as single statements on a piece of paper that he handed to Carmelite nuns. And some of them they're very practical, spiritual statements of great depth, all in one.
Like, could you give us an example? Yes,
sure. The purest suffering produces the purest understanding. You know, a single sentence like that. So the pure suffering would be what? Well, when it's offered up, when it's really seen to be a means of union with our Lord, then it opens us up to a deeper insight, to, you know, a greater love for God. Or, you know, a statement like, you know, be a friend of the Passion of Christ. Well, these are statements that, you know, can follow us a whole lifetime. One of the best ones, perhaps, is at the evening of life, at the end, at the evening of life, you will be examined in love. Learn then to love as God desires to be loved, and abandon your own ways of acting. You know, there's so much in a state. You could read that for a lifetime.
You could. That's quite sort of moving, beautiful, and also challenging at the same time. For anybody who's not familiar with the life of St. John of the Cross, Father Donald, could you give us a quick sort of summary of who he was and when he lived?
Sure. He's in the time of the Protestant Reformation. He was born in 1542, and so it's also the time of the Council of Trent. He was 27 years younger than St. Teresa of Avila. He met her within weeks, couple of months after his ordination, and that was life-changing. He had wanted to be a Carthusian at that point, and she convinced him to join the reform of the Carmelite order, which she had already started 5 years earlier of the women's cloistered branch. And he joined that. And one of the most significant things in his life is while that reform was occurring 5 years later, he was kidnapped by his own Calcite Carmelite men's order, and for 9 months spent an imprisonment of sorts in a 8-foot by 10-foot converted closet with no light in it other than a slit of light on the top of the wall. And really almost to the point of dying there, and then escaped. And that was something of his own, perhaps Dark Night of the Soul. He composed the famous spiritual canticle, the poem of the spiritual canticle, which is of great beauty, modeled on the Song of Songs. And all of his writing is commentary on poems that he wrote. He was a magnificent spiritual poet also, still read in Spanish universities. And he died young at 49. He died as he wanted to be, offered up, abandoned somewhat, suffering even from within his own order, and really identified with the Passion and Cross of our Lord Jesus Christ. And what's amazing to me also, he wrote all of these works in a 10-year period. And when you look at the collected works, it's a substantial book. And that's within 10 years, no computers, you know, just finding that time also in his life.
It's incredible. You're listening to Father Donald Hegarty speaking about his new book, which is on St. John of the Cross, Master of Contemplation. But as you're speaking, Father Donald, I mean, he does come across as an austere figure. I mean, he is. I mean, what would you say for the ordinary Christian who is interested, intrigued by him, but hasn't quite found the doorway in? How would you suggest accessing the first steps into his writings, into his thought?
Well, I would access him through the aphorisms. I might recommend my own book too, because he's not somebody. He's not somebody who I would definitely not advise reading through his collected works book by book. He has four major treatises: the Ascent of Mount Carmel, the Dark Night, the Spiritual Canticle, the Living Flame of Love. But what he does, and what's advantageous to have a commentary, as this book is, and to make him more accessible, he needs to be read a part of Ascent of Mount Carmel, and then perhaps a part of the Dark Night, because he's coming back to that same topic and theme. And then he amplifies something more in the Spiritual Canticle. So it's good. Like, that book I wrote has many, you know, substantial quotes, block quotes at times, and that's a good way to get into him. That's how I started with him, reading a good commentary on him and then plunging into the work. I find my collected works, which I've had now over 30 years, is full of black ink, blue ink, red ink, you know, many things I've read over and over, and then there are sometimes blank pages, because there are some things that I haven't, you know, found that resonating in my life. But when he is on target, there's nobody like him, I think. Teresa of Lisieux, by the way, said she read him between the age of 19 and 21 continually, and after that, she could not read any other spiritual writer other than The Imitation of Christ. Yeah.
Wow. I mean, I have read Teresa of Avila. Yeah, John of the Cross is great friend and so forth. And I find her so much more accessible. I mean, she's even funny, witty at times, and humorous, and has a wonderful... and I thought there must be something... I'm missing something here with John of the Cross, because every time I opened him up, it would be bafflement, really, at what he was saying, and I couldn't get into it. But I think you may have given me the key, which is to get your book and to start to explore those foothills a bit. Now, you mentioned a phrase there which has come into common parlance, which is dark night of the soul, and it's a phrase which is often abused and often used in semi-humorous ways for people. But was he the first person to really coin that phrase? And if so, what did he actually mean by it?
Well, he actually uses the phrase the dark night of the spirit, and that became later, you know, the equivalent to what we speak of as the dark night of the soul. But John of the Cross meant by that term, he uses the phrase dark night in a very significant way, but it refers to purifications that can be early on in spiritual life, the dark night of the senses, which is a difficulty in purifications as we begin some entry into contemplative prayer, strong aridities experienced, or the mind kind of being silenced more in prayer. The darkness, a blindness that can, the soul, the person can undergo in the beginning of prayer. And then later on, he will be speaking of what is called the dark night of the soul. The dark night of the spirit is a serious, severe purification and trial where we know from, and you may have perhaps even had on your radio program, comments in the past about Mother Teresa's book, Come Be My Light, where she went through a serious trial of faith beginning in the 1950s and extending to some extent, you know, throughout her remaining life. And that dark night of the soul is a trial, in a sense, attacking faith. Not that a person doubts or not that they no longer believe, nothing like that, but that a cloud descending on one's life of faith, that as you become more united to God, you know, sometimes the analogy is if you're looking at a mountain from the distance, it has great beauty in the contours. If you were standing at the base of that mountain with all the trees in front of you, you would not see the mountain anymore. And so this can be the reality of spiritual life. As you get closer to God, you can be more overwhelmed by being overshadowed by his presence. So the dark night of the soul is a serious trial. Mm-hmm.
Indeed. And, I mean, no doubt you've, you and people, other people at the Avila Institute have dealt with people who have dealt, who have had to undergo this. But is it something which, I mean, with Mother Teresa, it seemed to last for decades. I mean, is it normal in the Christian life at some point to go through something, maybe not as long as Mother Teresa, but something akin to that?
Well, I think the dark night of the soul is something that many, many saints never experienced. I think it's a particular suffering that God has invited some saints into. Saint Teresa of Lisieux apparently had the dark night of the soul in her, at least her last 6 months of life.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's that common, but we could say that a taste of the dark night of the soul is kind of common. You know, when people have a tragedy in their life, some sudden loss of a loved family member, that's very difficult experience of being weighed down with almost a harsh sense that God has abandoned me. And that's really what the dark night of the soul is. It's almost the experience of a person of Jesus in his own passion, expressing the words of the psalm, my God, why have you abandoned me? And that we all can have some taste of that, as life mm-hmm. goes on.
You said there that not all saints are mystics, undergo the dark night of the soul. Is it the case that all saints are mystics then, or that some saints are more given to that than others? I mean, I know that's a rather crude way of putting it, but is it the default that all saints by their nature are mystics?
Well, I would go back to what we said initially in our conversation, because certainly not all saints have mystical experience, if we mean by
right.
that extraordinary experience or visions. But I would say with great certitude, all saints were contemplatives. They all had contemplative, they'd all crossed the threshold into deep contemplative life. And even when they were very active, some of these Jesuit saints, of Francis Xavier, Ignatius, very active people, but because they were very united to God, they were deeply contemplative in their interior life. And a contemplation in the interior life will be very different for somebody living in the world or somebody living in a monastery or cloister. So they were all contemplatives, even though you could see a very active life there. But mystics, if we mean by mystic contemplation, then yes, we can use that term.
Do you think, I mean, most of the people listening to this today will be lay people. I mean, are we all called to the same sort of surrender to God's will in our lives, in the sense that that these deeper realities are possible? I'm not saying that we'll all achieve them, but they're possible to even lay people.
Yes, I mean, absolutely. And that's the great reason why to get these people like John of the Cross, Teresa of Avila, Saint Therese, get them out to the public, because my experience as a priest over a number of years now, and at Saint Patrick's Cathedral in New York, is that when people, in a sense, get caught by God, they start going to Mass every day, they take time, even in a busy life, but they take time for prayer, and prayer is key. You have to have a mm-hmm. serious life of prayer. But when they take prayer seriously and God seriously, receiving him every day, if that's possible, then yes, the interior life begins to undergo a hunger, a longing for God. The generosity of the life begins to, take place without perhaps even trying. And we could say it's like saying when the Vatican Council said we're all called to holiness, it's another way of saying we're all called to become more deeply contemplative in our longing for God, that the interior life opens up, more to God as we continue life. But we have to be careful, we make choices there.
Yes.
Sometimes I'd rather have a life of pleasure or a life of enjoyments that may not be too compatible then with a more, intent desire for God.
That's true. You're listening to Father Donald Hegarty with me this morning here on the Turley Frequency. I could talk to you for a lot longer, Father Donald, about St. John of the Cross, but unfortunately, believe it or not, we've almost run out of time. Tell people where they can find out more about the work you do in this particular area, but also where they can find your books.
Well, all five books are published by Ignatius Press, and they'd be available there. And then EWTN also has them in their catalog. And I don't have any blogs or anything like that, so the books are my main thing. I also have, sometimes they're using excerpts of these books in Magnificat, which I recommend highly. Magnificat is a great publication with these reflections every day and readings. But the books are available from Ignatius Press.
And also you're listed on the AvillaInstitute.org. I think people can go there as well and find lots of good resources if they want to pursue this type of thing.
Yes. And they are a great resource for things on prayer, the Avila Institute. That's true. They're great courses, and I recommend that highly.
That's great. Well, Father Donald, it's been a great pleasure speaking to you. I hope that you may come back again and lead us through, shed some light upon this dark night that we move through in this world.
Thank you so much for having me, Kevin.
Thank you, Father Donald. When we come back, we will be praying the Divine Mercy Chaplet. Stay with me here on Archangel Radio.